If there's one thing that 2020 has made abundantly clear, it's that we can no longer take Mother Nature for granted. The entire world is still struggling to contain and subdue the invisible monster that is the coronavirus. And while we still don't know whether this all started with someone eating a bat or in a laboratory, COVID-19 is not nearly the only monster we've faced this year. Mighty wildfires raging across miles and miles of forests, a biblical storm of locusts descending on us like a dark shadow, or the wrath of Indra himself, taking the form of mighty cyclones that destroy everything in their paths. This year has been momentous, to say the least. The impact of climate change could not be more blaringly obvious today, and the apocalyptic realities we have faced this year have been a clear indicator of Mother Earth's fury and thunder, literally and metaphorically. To decode each of these signs, this is Satyaki at Earshot, bringing you Angry Earth, a detailed look at each of these environmental anomalies which shook us to the core in 2020. In this episode, we look at the many cyclones which ravaged India this year, especially West Bengal, Orissa, and Maharashtra. We have with us Bharti Chaturvedi, renowned environmentalist and founder of environmental research and action group Chintan, and Dr. Roxy Matthew Cole, climate scientist at the Indian Institute of Tropical Meteorology. Hello, Ms. Chaturvedi. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for inviting me here.
We are glad to have you here with us. And we are hoping you'll be able to tell us some more about everything that's been happening this year. So many cyclones, from Amphan to Fani to Nisarga and so many others. And the effects and the severity, the frequency, everything seems to be a lot worse than we've ever seen in the last few years. So can you tell us what happened exactly? What's the reason behind all of these cyclones?
Well, you know, we've always had cyclones. In 1970, we had Bhola, which was really terrible. Almost between 3 and 5 lakh people died. And, it was a dreadful, dreadful event. And of course, while less people lose their lives, we are seeing that we're finding these cyclones, which were at one point infrequent and ferocious, but not the kind of cyclones we see today, we're seeing so many, one after the other, coming in. Amphan was considered one of the most dreadful in history, which means it was worse than Bhola. And if we weren't so good with our disaster mitigation and relief, then we would have lost many more lives because we're so many more people today compared to 1970. But one of the big reasons why we are seeing this change is, in fact, thanks to climate change, because one of the outcomes of climate change is that freak weather conditions are more frequent, and things like cyclones are not only more severe but also more frequent. And you will see that they will increase not only in the west but also in the east coast, but also the west coast. Right now we all think about Nisarga. We said, oh, there's something on the west coast, but normally we're used to Bengal and Orissa being devastated, or coastal parts of Andhra Pradesh. Now that is going to see also change. So I think climate change is actually on our doorstep, and it's actually impacting these extremely terrible kinds of cyclones. And they're not going to decline, they're going to increase. They might actually make living in coastal areas very, very difficult.
Of course, the coastal areas have been bearing the brunt of these storms for a while. With the decline of the mangrove covers in many of these coastal areas, they've been becoming even more vulnerable. But you know what, these things have been happening for a while, over a period of a few years. And while climate change has been receiving a lot greater focus in recent years than it has earlier, as the signs become more and more apparent, we don't really know whether our current scale and rate of climate response can match up with the long-term impact that has been building up over the years, decades, and even centuries. Could you please take us through the science of it all? What were the specific environmental factors that caused these cyclones?
So what happens, basically, to put it in a nutshell, is that when you have climate change, the seas, the oceans, the temperatures on the surface, not at the bottom so much as the surface in the context of cyclones, warms up. And what that means is that the winds, now cyclones are finally winds that are moving, right? So these winds move much, much faster. And so you're hit by something which is a much faster, stronger wind, which comes and, you know, hits the land finally. And that's why it's a more ferocious kind of weather event that happens. And that is why you're worse hit. And that is really what the problem is.
So you're saying the primary reason is the rise in the temperatures of oceans especially?
The rise in temperatures are very specifically linked with cyclones, and in the Bay of Bengal in particular, because we're talking of some of those cyclones, and they actually worsen the cyclones in terms of the speed of the wind and so on. And so what? And so they make it much more intense. And what happens is that when you're predicting a cyclone, you don't necessarily take into account the sea or the ocean surface temperature. So you actually sometimes, because we've never had this problem, these are relatively new challenges that we're facing. And so you don't necessarily, it's only now that people have begun to triangulate data like this. Otherwise, you would not expect this intensity, because you would not, neither would the science be that familiar, nor would you look at the temperature of the ocean. So this is absolutely dangerous. And over the Arabian Sea, there's already a chance of some cyclones happening post monsoon. So not everything is linked with climate change, but some of these trends we are seeing are definitely linked with climate change. And even the IPCC, report has very clearly said that, the Arabian Sea, and I'm saying this because in India, so often we think of the Bay of Bengal, but in the Arabian Sea, there is likely to be, an increase in warming oceans. And therefore, you could see cyclones, and even before the monsoon, not just after the monsoon. So we should be really concerned with these kind of, scientists call ocean heat waves and warming up of the oceans. Of course, there are many other things that will happen because of that.
Of course, the signs certainly point towards that. But, one of the things that have set these cyclones apart from those that we've seen in the past few years is that these ones formed and intensified a lot faster. Most of the major cyclones we saw this year went from Category 1 to higher in under a day. That's something that doesn't usually happen, does it? Dr. Cole, thank you for joining us. Could you tell us a little more about this?
Hi, Satyaki. It's my pleasure to talk about cyclones today. The North Indian Ocean, it accounts only for about 7% of the total number of tropical cyclones that occur globally. Yeah, but however, more than 80% of the global fatalities occur in this region, particularly around the Bay of Bengal. That's 80% of the global fatalities, just due to 7% of the total number of tropical cyclones. So any rise in the frequency or intensity like what you told just now of cyclones in this region is of grave concern. And that's what is exactly happening. And that's because of a basic physical property. Cyclones draw their energy from the warm ocean waters. And from our studies, what we have seen is that the Indian Ocean is rapidly warming. And as it is rapidly warming, it is brewing more intense storms during some of these seasons. Now, India has come a long way in cyclone forecasting and all. In 1999, we had the super cyclone, which hit Odisha and the East Coast, that killed several thousands of people. And from that point, from fatalities that measured in five-digit numbers, we have moved to two digits now. I mean, the fatalities right now are like two digits, handful of people from cyclones. That's because of improved cyclone forecasting. And also efficient communication between different government departments. In the case of Cyclone Amphan that hit the East Coast and Cyclone Nisarga that hit the West Coast recently, the IMD gave a skillful forecast on the track and intensity, which was accurate and saved lives. Now, it is another fact that makes these cyclones a complicated problem to deal with. In recent years, we have seen that the cyclones are forming much more quite quickly. Like you asked me about the change of cyclone from a category 1 cyclone to a category 5 cyclone in quite a few hours, right? So in terms of Cyclone Amphan also, it intensified from a category 1 cyclone to a category 5 cyclone in a span of just 18 hours. That's like overnight. So night you're going to sleep with a cyclone of category 1 status, which is like category 1 cyclone, which is like a very weak cyclone, and when you wake up, it's a strong super cyclone overnight. That's quite fast intensification. So our research shows that high ocean temperatures are conducive for such a rapid intensification of cyclones in the North Indian Ocean. And in the current case, in the recent case of Cyclone Amphan, the Bay of Bengal was unusually warm prior to the cyclones. We have buoys or instruments in these basins, in these ocean basins, which record these ocean temperatures. And the surface temperatures that we recorded in the Bay of Bengal prior to Cyclone Amphan were in the range of 30 degrees Celsius to 33 degrees Celsius. And these are record temperatures driven by climate change, which we have never seen before. So earlier, or usually the temperatures there are between 29 degrees Celsius to 31 degrees Celsius, but now it is reaching up to 33 degrees Celsius very often, and this has fueled rapid intensification of these cyclones in the recent years. And we are seeing not this kind of events not just with Amphan, but many other cyclones in the recent years, like Cyclone Oki, which took several lives. This also started from the south of Bay of Bengal and moved to Arabian Sea, hitting Lakshadweep and parts of South India. So many of these cyclones are intensifying because of warm waters, and weather forecast models are finding it difficult to simulate this rapid cyclone intensification due to ocean warming. And that's a challenge that we need to address in near term.
And unless we do, as Ms. Chaturvedi mentioned, the scale of destruction is only going to get worse and much harder to control or predict. The chasms between what we understand and know and what we don't are still enormous. The only way to ease Mother Nature's fury is to gain a deep understanding of the environmental realities of today and commit to the responsibilities that come with them. That's it for now. In the next episode, we return with Ms. Chaturvedi and Dr. Cole to gain a more holistic understanding of these responsibilities as well as the way ahead. What comes next in cyclones and catastrophe? Stay tuned to find out. Until next time on Angry Earth, only on Earshot. We do not inherit the earth from our ancestors. We borrow it from our children. This ancient proverb was a fundamental part of the ancient Native American culture, passed down through generations and generations. No one knows who first uttered these words of wisdom, but the truth and gravity in the words ring true even to this day. They're a rousing reminder of our responsibility towards Mother Nature, as well as the ones who come after us. But this year, we witnessed these reminders even more vividly, and got to see exactly what happens when nature's fury is truly unleashed. This is Sataki at Earshot. Welcome back to Cyclones and Catastrophe on Angry Earth with Ms. Bharti Chaturvedi and Dr. Roxy Matthew Cole. In our last episode, we spoke about how the continued degradation of the ecological balance over the years led to Mother Nature's many violent outbursts that we saw this year, especially the cyclonic storms. The heating up of the ocean waters and the subsequent effects all point to a long history of environmental degradation. Ms. Chaturvedi, could you tell us how the situation has worsened over the years?
Well, first of all, we have to realize that in the developing world, I mean everywhere in the world, but I'll stick with the developing world. A lot of development, urbanization, and it happened along coasts. I mean, coasts are places of extraordinary productivity. And Mumbai is only one example. But when you're going to look at these heat waves in oceans, what you're seeing is many more cyclones. And the, you know, when cyclones hit you, they're much stronger because they're coming in with much greater speed. So your infrastructure is gone. The cost of repairing it is very high. The viability of a city that is hit by an ocean-based climate change impact, which is basically hit by a cyclone, is going to, you know, make it pretty unviable if this is going to happen again and again. And consequently, there's going to be the loss of all that infrastructure. There's going to be out-migration, not just by the poor, but also, in fact, by people of means. And you're going to fragment that ecosystem. So first of all, there's that crisis. Secondly, you know, across the oceans, you have traditional fishermen. And that's a very special community to us, both on the east and the west coast. And these people have always, they understand the ocean. They understand the ecology of the ocean, the pulse of the ocean. And they have eked a sustainable livelihood for centuries by reading the ocean and by fishing sustainably. And that will get over because it's really difficult if this continues, not only because of cyclones, but because sea levels will rise. I mean, a warmer sea means that the sea level is going to rise, right? And if the sea level is going to rise, then basically you're going to see in flooding. And then how do you expect, low-lying areas to exist? They're going to be watery, not land-like. And so I think we're going to not only lose land, we're going to lose centers of productivity and centers of sustainable jobs on the coasts. I think it's something that's going to happen faster than we realize, you know, whether it's Mumbai, perhaps and other cities, you can go all the way up and think of other cities which might be in danger, like Karachi. And I do think we should really expect this to a large degree.
Right. Dr. Cole, has your research into these phenomena revealed any other personal observations?
One of the interesting factors that has come out of our research is that it's the same warm waters that intensify these cyclones. They are also responsible for other extreme weather events as well, both over the ocean and over the land. So one of the interesting extreme events are the marine heat waves. So we have heard about heat waves over the land, right? But what are marine heat waves? These are heat waves over the ocean, much similar to that over the land. So they are ocean's erratic response to increased warm waters. For example, an underwater survey showed that 85% of the corals in Gulf of Mannar, that's again in the south of Bay of Bengal, near the Tamil Nadu coast, got bleached in May after the ocean temperatures peaked. Yeah, so these are the same same ocean conditions that triggered and intensified the cyclone in Bay of Bengal. The same ocean conditions are driving heat waves over the ocean and killing corals. Now, corals are, I mean, there are only few corals in the ocean, but they host about 25% of the marine biodiversity. And this is personal for me as well, because I love nature, I love marine biodiversity. I have gone for scuba diving. I love corals, and I have seen the diversity around corals. So it's a bit hard on me to see that these kind of events are driving multiple extreme events across the ocean and over the land also. And similarly, these warm waters are supporting heavy rain events over land during the monsoon. So generally, when the air is warmer than usual, it holds more moisture, it becomes unstable too. So there is a thermodynamic property which we can see in most of these weather events, that because of increased ocean and land warming, the monsoon patterns have changed. We are seeing a lot of extreme events on the west coast and also on the east coast. These are due to these fluctuations driven by these kind of warm water events.
Right. So what kind of short and long-term impact can we expect in the near future if these things remain unchecked?
Our institute, along with the Ministry of Earth Sciences, came out with the first national climate change report of India recently. That's the first climate change report for India. So in this report, the temperatures projected to rise are by 2.7 degrees Celsius by 2040. Now it is around 0.7 to 1 degree Celsius over India. That is projected to rise by 2.7 degrees Celsius by 2040 and 4.4 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. That means we should be ready to face a further increase in the intensity, frequency, and also the extent of these kind of extreme weather events, whether it be cyclones or extreme rains or marine heat waves. So importantly, the chances of these extremes overlapping are large, multiplying the threat. We call them combo events. For example, an Indian cyclone like that we just talked about, it may be accompanied by heavy rains and storm surges in the background of a rising sea level, as in the case of recent cyclones. So for cities like Mumbai or Kolkata or Chennai or Cochin, this can be huge, because if a cyclone comes along with heavy rains and storms and the sea level is also rising, that can lead to long-term flooding.
Well, Ms. Chaturvedi, could you tell us about the steps that are being taken right now? What is being done to address all of these factors, and what else can we and should we be doing?
So, you know, what we're doing right now, I mean, there's less to say about what we're doing and more to say about what we're not doing. I think we've been in 2020, for the large part, Amphan or anything else, we've really been struggling between preventing and containing COVID and dealing with these crises. Because after all, anyone who's either a relief giver or a victim of this is going to have to violate a lot of COVID protocols in order to save lives, but in fact endanger themselves to this infection, so to this virus. So, so first of all, that is one thing to remember. I think we're at this point just doing relief, because it's actually quite difficult to do very much more given the condition, the kind of COVID-induced condition in our country and all over the world. So I think what we really have to do, and I'm convinced that you can't carry on with this level of development. I mean, Mumbai wanted to expand its airport and cut down all the mangroves, and today it's absolutely flooded with excess rainwater. And time and again, nature is telling you that your development is all wrong. But there's very little attention being paid to that. So I think what we're doing is very little. And I don't personally have very much to say beyond outstanding climate relief, outstanding advance warning. I mean, we saw Amphan was just one example. I mean, Orissa has been absolutely outstanding in how it's saved lives again and again and again, with its really good ability for doing preventive work and evacuation, Bengal as well. But it's much harder to do in a place like Maharashtra, particularly a crowded place like Mumbai. And so all I can say is, apart from various kinds of relief, the big things are not being done. The shifting in the model of development, the appreciation of nature and ecologies by, in fact, protecting them and expanding that ecological system which stands destroyed by not doing the wrong kind of development, all of that is not happening. It's absolutely not happening. Instead, we're just looking at lakhs of trees being cut down for roadways and the kinds of developments which are inviting further damage when cyclones happen.
We need to be aware of the local environment also, since the density of the population and their vulnerability also and the land use conditions can increase the risk. So along with the overlapping extreme events like cyclones, storms and sea level and all, the local population and their vulnerability and land use changes also are important. So this is where installing early warning systems that integrate these multiple threats can help us. So an example is that recently a flood warning system was installed in Mumbai. That's on an experimental basis by the Ministry of Earth Sciences. So such a flood warning system takes into consideration the topography, the drainage and the water bodies in the city, the tidal levels and also the rainfall data, and tells us the extent of floods that can happen at different pockets of the city. So until now we had only weather forecast. It will tell only the how much rains it would happen, or if it's a cyclone, how much strong the winds are. But we don't know the integrated effect of all these events together. So such early warning systems, if it works out, we need to replicate these efforts across the country. And that's the first step towards climate resilience.
Of course, but while we absolutely must focus on climate resilience and early prediction systems to help reduce the scale of damage and destruction, can you tell us if there's also a way to remedy the factors that lead to such events? And can we prevent or at least reduce their scale and frequency?
So most of these events are happening on a global scale due to global changes in carbon dioxide emissions. So human emissions are largely responsible for these changes in cyclone events and ocean warming, which triggers these cyclone events. So if you want to reduce these events or have flattened them in the next several decades, the only way forward is to reduce the emissions. And the one important factor there is that we can reduce the emissions, but the carbon dioxide which we have already emitted, it has a long lifespan, which means that if we have emitted particular amount of carbon dioxide today, it will remain there in the atmosphere for the next 100 or thousands of years. So we have already done a lot of damage. What we can do is to reduce the acceleration of these events further, reduce the rate of increase of these events further. So whatever extremes we are seeing now, it is going to be there for a long time. So by reducing emissions globally and locally, we can probably reduce the rate of increase in the number of cyclones in the future. So, which is why we need, along with the mitigation of these kind of events, we also need early warning systems, which can help us in, you know, when these events are coming, and also address these events, take immediate actions on the ground level.
Thank you, Dr. Kohl and Ms. Chaturvedi. This brings us to the end of Cyclones and Catastrophe. But 2020's tales of environmental horror are far from over. Like a dark shadow descending on the world, yet another furious warning sign of Mother Nature given form plagued us this year. Stay tuned, because Ms. Chaturvedi and Dr. Kohl will be back with us once again in the next episode of Angry Earth, Plague of Locusts, only on Earshot.